Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the O'Day Vets podcast. This week, Dr. Loanne and I will be talking about blindness in dogs. It's a jam-packed episode full of lots of info, so we hope you enjoy it.
And I thought this week maybe you could share, as your eyes are your speciality, something that I think is a big concern to pet owners. Kind of the, I suppose it's the ultimate, what you don't want to happen is kind of visual impairment. Yeah. We're going to specifically talk about dogs
today. Blindness, severe visual impairment, and even slight impairment, visual impairment, you know, can make a big difference, you know, mm-hmm. sort of to an adapting dog or cat, you know, sort of. Yeah, it is quite a broad, you know, sort of field. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of pretty much anything can go wrong, you know, sort of in the eye, and can ultimately affect the one function, you know, sort of all the main function, I would say, of this eye, which is really to see and help with the sense of sight. But yes, we could probably maybe just break it up into some categories. Mm-hmm. So some of these congenital or birth abnormalities, you know, there's nothing really we can do about. It is what it is, and it's almost as if these little individuals don't know anything other than what they are, you know, sort of given and born with. Mm-hmm. So the adaptation there is probably a little bit better, a little bit easier.
Yes.
You know, everybody knows where we stand, and often there's no major discomfort or pain or irritation associated with those conditions. But yes, there are some you know, sort of diseases and conditions where, you know, just us being observant and just paying attention to what's happening around our dogs and cats' eyes, mm-hmm. You know, we could probably intervene and pick up some of these things a little bit earlier.
Could get worse, but it can get better.
Correct.
So get that check, because quite often, kind of, is the eyes may be a little bit weepy, a little bit squinty,
yeah.
But the dog overall seems okay.
Yes.
I find people, unless that's kind of one of the best things people are going to rush to the vets for.
Absolutely.
And then sometimes, with you being the specialist, they normally perhaps would go to their general practice vet.
Yeah.
Try the initial eye drops or weeners to treat a normal eye infection first.
Yes.
And so there's normally quite a number of weeks before that patient, if it's something a little bit more serious, it's going to be a while before they get to you.
Yeah.
So are there some kind of problems that you think in earlier intervention by someone like yourself would be a little bit... chances of more of salvaging some?
Absolutely. With the two main conditions that we worry about here that would ultimately affect, you know, sort of vision, specifically glaucoma,
mm-hmm.
And then the second one, inflammation in the eye, or uveitis, mm-hmm. as we call it. Both these conditions will start off with minor, you know, sort of changes and symptoms around the eye. So, as you mentioned, a bit of a weepy discharge or a bit of a mucus buildup, you know, sort of around the eye, or just looking a little bit sensitive, you know, than usual, an extra blink or squint, you know, here and there. But often those are, and the signs are subtle, often that those are key identifying factors to some of these major problems down the line. And particularly with something like glaucoma, we don't have a lot of time. Glaucoma is specifically a condition that affects pressure within the eye. And an increase or a sudden spike of pressure in the eye can produce you know, some of these symptoms, discharge, a bit of a color change around the eye, can be sore. But if this is not identified early enough and not managed early enough, very quickly we'll be losing function, visual function, and that process is irreversible. Once it's in process, there's not much we can do to the rest of the key things with our dogs specifically. When compared to, say, for instance, ourselves, we have millions and millions of rods and cones in our retinas. And the slightest little change in our vision, we would know that something is up, long before, these cells become damaged. With our dogs and cats, by the time there's a visual problem, we are weeks, probably months, into this process. So once again, very, very close attention, early detection is
really important. More common ones that you see. So I know a lot of your job role involves surgery for cataract.
That's right.
So yes. That's another one that a lot of owners report.
Yes.
And I think, is it because, do you think it's something that they can see? It's quite a, although it does progress gradually, there's that whiteness in the eye. It's quite obvious, so maybe that's the one that they bring to you.
Yeah. Absolutely that, for the owner, it's a noticeable change, within the eyes. And of course, as that is happening, the individual dog or cat will start to show, signs of visual impairment. So behavioral changes at home, bumping into things, becoming a bit disorientated or lost in a space that is supposedly for them. But yes, most cataract changes, happen very gradually and slowly over time. So often, particularly dogs and cats, will adjust accordingly as these changes are slowly happening. When it becomes to what we would call end phase, or when these cataracts become a bit more established, maybe more noticeable outward, behavioral changes may set in. That's easier to pick up, by the pet owner. And then in some instances, we do have cataracts that set in very, very rapidly. And this is specifically in the case of a diabetic dog. Yeah, and we see a lot more, diabetics being diagnosed, and that's a whole podcast in the end. But yes, one of the most common complications of the diabetic state is cataracts, diabetic cataracts.
Yes.
And we've had some dog diabetics go blind literally overnight. That's how quickly these cataracts can set in. And of course, that for and happening that quickly, for everyone in the household, that can become quite a thing. It's quite distressing for the dog, and of course, for mom and dad.
Yes.
That is quite a big thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, fortunately, cataracts can be removed. Surgical removal of cataracts can help to restore vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the same as what happens with you and I, human cataract surgery. It is the same technology, same equipment, same management, post-operatively. But that's at least one condition that we could possibly make a difference, and quite a big difference.
Yes.
In terms of visual function.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I had a job. Unfortunately, we weren't living here, so you couldn't do the job for us. So I had Bichon, called Noodles, who did, around the age of 5, started noticing the bumping into things,
right,
and a little bit of cloudiness,
right,
which was cataracts,
right,
and had the surgery. So I know that you do have to do before surgery to see if they're a candidate, to make sure that the rods and cones are okay,
yes.
To make it a little more technical there, but
yes.
What is it you're checking for? Is it ERG, is that right?
That's exactly that. So an ERG, or an electroretinogram, basically tests function, electrical function, coming off the rods and cones in the retina at the back of the eye. So if we look at the structure of the eye, the cataract is specific to the lens
yes.
within the eye, and it basically is an opacity that blocks light coming in and out of the eye. Now, vision is actually processed, or the whole process of vision or the visual pathway starts in the retina. So we need to have a functional, healthy retina for this eye to see. An opacity within the lens, of course, complicates vision and can be removed to restore clear visual access, but we need functional rods and cones for vision to actually be processed, you know, so then the brain can interpret it as a visual image. So this little test, the ERG, electroretinogram, tests retinal function. Very often with a developing cataract, we can't see the retina physically with some of the instruments that we use to examine the eye. So we can't really tell if it looks normal or not, or if it's in a state of degeneration. So this electrical function test sort of gives us very accurate and definitive details as to whether this retina is working and whether this eye will be able to see again following cataract removal. So it's a very critical test to do beforehand to determine the success or the outcome post-operatively. Yeah. So I believe Noodles did have a good CRG.
Yes, well, I think one eye was fine. Perfect. The other eye, it wasn't as good, but still good enough to go ahead in the surgery. And she did. Unfortunately, there was a complication post-op, and we did end up having to remove one of the eyes. And actually, the one that was left was the one that wasn't as good on the But it brought over 5 years, roughly, of vision. So it was well worth it, because she was so young, she was only five. Yes. And then as she aged, she got to around 10, and then it started to go again. There was no reversing that process.
And that's another, you know, sort of trigger or cause, you know, sort of for visual impairment, blindness, retinal degeneration, retinal problems, which in Noodle's case seemed to have been a very slow, progressive, you know, sort of issue. And there are some instances where it can happen very quickly. Sudden acquired retinal degeneration is one of these big ones. So we need to find out a bit more about this disease. There's you know, sort of active research and ongoing, you know, sort of investigations into cases, and it is specific to dogs, as far as we know. But yes, this can cause a very sudden process of degeneration in the retina, where also over a very short period of time, days to weeks, individuals can go from completely visual to completely blind. And there's nothing really we can do.
Yes.
Unlike cataract surgery, there's no way of fixing. You know, those very highly specialized rods and cones, in the retina, once they start to degenerate, or once they undergo massive scale degeneration, that's it really. Can't stop it, can't reverse it, can't fix it. It's probably one of the most frustrating conditions that result in blindness, where there's nothing really we can do. It's kind of why
most distressing cases, that kind of visit us, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Because the owner is so surprised to kind of wake up to find that their dog is struggling.
Yes.
It's distressing for the dog, they're distressing for the owner.
Yes.
Sometimes it takes a little bit of time, everybody in the dog and the owners, to kind of come to the new trauma.
Yes.
And a new creation sometimes is necessary.
That's right.
In trauma cases and in other cases,
yes,
as well.
Yes.
So do you find, I'm thinking about certain breeds of dogs that kind of experience trauma with the eyes a little bit more than others?
Yeah, absolutely. So it would typically be what we call our brachycephalic breeds, short nose, short face, flat face, and along with that come these big bulging eyes. Beautiful eyes,
yes,
but unfortunately just more exposed and more prone to environmental trauma, and you know, just damage to ocular surfaces, And in more severe cases, damage to internal structures from severe, sort of lung trauma or head trauma. And unfortunately, in a case where we've come to a point where vision has totally gone and irreversibly so, and there's been significant damage done to the structural integrity of the globe or the eye, only real solution would be to nucleate or remove. Yeah, so nucleation is a pretty effective tool, something that we do have to do often, unfortunately. But the thought process or the criteria involved before we get to that point is often very individualized and specific to that patient. Mm-hmm. And if that's the last resort, then yes, we have to consider that. Yes.
And in my experience of the nucleations that were done in general practice, and not even with you guys specialized. I find that's kind of one of the things that I find owners often react badly to, is that a word? Do they find it quite, I remember a particular case, and I think we were very busy at the hospital I was working at, and the lady, I think it was like a Shih Tzu or a Japanese, had its eyes removed. I can't remember what condition it was, but it was very painful before, so it was done as a, this will make your dog much more comfortable. And I walked into the consult room to discharge the dog, and the lady, poor lady, saw the dog, and she was like, no, and she left the room, her and her daughter. It was such an extreme reaction that, because obviously we see things every day. So now, when I'm taking an eye out, or if I'm dealing with clients, I can see the dog, I'm like, your dog is comfortable. It may look bad, because it's that kind of the shaved area, the eyes being ulcerated by suture.
Change, it is an invasive procedure. It's an amputation, literally removing the organ. And it's big. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of emotional, processing that needs to happen around it. And often we find that for the patient, for the dog or the cat, it's not such a big thing. No, not at all. In fact, we often see immediately post-operative a major improvement, in behavior, in habitus, in the way that patient is feeling, particularly when dealing with a very painful, sort of eye. And it's often in the days following the operation that owners will then come to realize that, oh gosh, my dog is a lot happier and is more himself or herself now that this procedure.
How about, it's definitely we see certain breeds, but we regularly see for certain conditions.
Yes.
So are there kind of factors, genetic factors at play that maybe people with certain breeds need to look out for, or get testing done with breeders specifically?
Absolutely, yes. Genetically, certain breeds are predisposed to some of these conditions that do produce blindness.
Mm-hmm.
Often these conditions come with no pain or discomfort, from that point of view, but it does, sort of render these eyes eventually completely blind. And the only way to sort of identify or somehow make a difference in terms of the outcome, of these breeds or the longevity of these breeds would be to look at breeding and genetics and selective breeding and identifying some of these genetic conditions to vary enough. So just to mention a few of these breeds, probably the most common that we do come across would probably be our Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, Dachshunds, Poodles, our standard Minis, Poodles, spandrels, to name a few. But certainly, as we get exposed to more and more breeds, international breeds coming in, and that sort of thing, we're seeing progressive blindness and progressive genetic conditions that produce blindness. And often these conditions are only picked up, later on in life. So from middle age to, older age, do we sometimes then only pick up that this nothing we can do to manipulate it. Mm-hmm. It all comes down to breeding. And as we mentioned earlier, selective breeding, a prudent approach, breeding stock or selecting, males and females for breeding. So this is probably where a specialist veterinarian, a specialist ophthalmologist can make a difference in helping the breeder identify, some of these conditions early enough, before littermates start are affected with it. And also, as a pet owner that is looking for a specific breed, make some inquiries, do some research, mm-hmm. ask if somebody can do genetic tests.
Some puppies are higher price, and because if they have gone through the process, it can be costly if they're checking their breeding stock and checking them regularly. Sometimes it's not just a one-off check you would do, that's right, you would maybe do annually or...
Absolutely. And also to understand at the same time that genetics is such a complicated, thing on its own. And yes, we can do the checks and run the tests and look and hunt and look out for these things. But inevitably, somewhere down the line, some of these recessive issues.
As you said before, there's some cases where there is nothing you can do, and you just have to help our dogs to get used to it, to be comfortable, to be happy with their kind of new life of not being able to rely on their visual senses.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes little things at home, just some tips and cues or advice,
yes,
could rely on at home.
Yeah, for sure. So I think initially the main concern is more the safety.
Yes.
Whilst your dog kind of starts to adapt, we need to make sure that they can explore, get used to the layout without any injury. So. It seems obvious, but just remove things from the floor. So when you come home, take your shoes off, put your shoes in the cupboard. And then that's just a trip hazard because your shoes are not normally there. They weren't there 5 minutes ago, but now they are. And you've forgotten. It takes a little while for you to get used to the process as well. If the dog then only has to navigate objects, so the chair is kind of always by the table. So we know that when he comes close to the chair, then okay, I'll move around because the chair goes there. So kind of pushing chairs in once you've set them for dinner, then push a chair in when you've finished, those things. And being in South Africa, a big concern is your paw area.
Yes.
So definitely either close that section of the garden, if possible, with a gate or whatever you can do, so that there is no access, so there's no accidental, you turned your eye on, just popped to the toilet, and then you came back and your dog was struggling with the paw.
Yeah.
Or have a permanent cover that you can just lift off when you're there using it, but always remember you need two put backs.
Yes.
And steps as well, so stairs. I found with my blind dog, she had other problems as well, so movement was an issue for her, but she could go up the stairs, but then to come down, it would be dangerous.
Yes.
So ensure that there is kind of, so don't think, oh well, I've got the top of the stairs, so if she's coming down, she won't fall. You don't want her to go up the stairs if you're not available to watch a stumble for them to fall back down the stairs.
Yes.
So things like that, steps out to the garden. So what I definitely recommend people to do is just making the texture different. So if it's like a a tile floor, just put a strip of rubber or something that's a bit bumpy on steps, so that kind of becomes the indication of the steps are coming. Because most of the time they do navigate and they know where the door is, they get used to it on the steps going down. But there are those times, maybe a bit of disorientation, startled for something else, maybe there was a noise and they startled and then they kind of ran off without in a panic, as you would do, but when you have your eyes, you can see you're running towards the door. But yeah, in those cases, maybe that change of surface would indicate to them, I'm on steps, I need to stop. And also, as you mentioned about the senses, you can use, so initially, it definitely helps, maybe like some cotton wool balls hanging from your door handle, with maybe like a pet safe essential oil, so they know, yes, the smell that way, is that door leading to that way, different smells that way. So again, use the senses that they can still use.
Yes.
And so they're hearing, from that point of view, yourself or other pets in your household, maybe to have a bell or a tag on their collar that makes a little bit of noise.
Right.
Just so that the dog knows where to find you. So if you've got slippers on at home, when you're walking around the home, they can hear the bells and they know you're kind of in that room, a little bit further away.
Right.
And I find it also helps with the relationship between dogs, because if the dog that can't see is sleeping or doesn't hear the other dog coming up behind them, if they're just normally walking on the rug, that bell gives a little bit of an indication, less likely for a startle and then maybe a bit of aggression from the fear.
Yes.
From the blind dog, because they were taken by surprise. So just to make them, so they know where everyone is, they don't panic that they don't know where anyone is, they can hear a bell the distance, they know where to find them. There are some, I don't know if you ever see patients that come in with the halos. Have you seen those on the harness?
Yes.
So sometimes I think it's unnecessary if the dog is getting around, but some people seem to find that they help. So it's normally they're wearing a harness and it has like a plastic ring coming from like the shoulder area, isn't it? That goes all the way around to the other shoulder. So it's more of a stop you bumping in when you know the halo. Hit something. So do you see many with those?
Yes, those are not widely available. Only if really kind of pet owners know about it, do they sort of do an inquiry and try and get hold of one. But yes, I think exactly that. If the little dog individual seems to be adapting and coping really well, may not be necessary, but maybe sometimes in the initial phases of an acute adjustment. Or adjustment phase, that may be helpful. Or perhaps a dog or an individual that is struggling with a vision loss and has complicated hearing, or hearing deficits as well. That may be beneficial, just an extra, sort of guide in an unfamiliar environment, or as the individual is relearning their familiar or home environment using other senses.
Yes, for sure. And I suppose out for walks, definitely would recommend a longer lead so that you have control.
Yes.
Because I know with my Bichon that went blind, so she couldn't walk on a lead. She had proprioception problems and neurological problems, so her movement wasn't okay. So if she had a lead on, then she couldn't quite balance and fall over. She was fine. So it made it difficult when she was out. So we went every day for a walk in the field.
Nice.
So she would be off on the lead because she could balance much better that way. So there were some times where she would take a sudden turn, none of us were expecting, into a tree. But so we learned an emergency stop for that. So if I could see she was about to go, I would call her stop, or she would just sense from the tone of my voice and she would just put the brakes on. So those kind of things, I would definitely recommend a lead, but if for some reason you're unable to, or to just help around the home, if you can see they're about to bump into something, stop. Using that word or that alarm call or something just to indicate to them, just stop where you are. You're about to hurt yourself in some way. And if you do use it, so my Bichon had learning difficulties as well, so it wasn't a dog that you could teach a cue to in a normal way.
Yes.
But we just used it all the time. So she did then learn that she was about to do something silly. And so she would just stop and wait to be positioned somewhere a bit better. They can do really well. So a dog who has no other issues other than just the visual, they can be safe and be comfortable. And also I would recommend, so it doesn't mean because they can't see, they can't play and things, definitely throw a ball for a dog that can't see. They'll use their hearing to hear the bounces. I remember at work seeing a Spring Spaniel bounce that ball, the dog would catch it every time. It's just, it is amazing to see, and they do really cope. And then for enrichment, use your snuffle mats or like hide and seek with treats and things, but they still can have a fulfilled life and a rich life. Just like as you said, use those other senses that are there.
Yes.
Think out of the box sometimes.
Yes, and that's probably what it comes down to. You know, and I think you touched on this. This individual can have a pretty normal, long and healthy, life ahead. Just because of a visual deficit, won't take away from longevity and quality of life.
Yeah.
And I think all these little things will help, to sort of support the process of adaptation and figuring it out.
Yes,
that's really incredible.
But I certainly, for people who are maybe struggling with the thought of their dog, there are plenty of kind of Facebook groups and things online, people that are living with blind pets. So I definitely would recommend if you're going through that moment of, is this the right thing? Is it fair for my dog? Kind of do your research, speak to other people who are in the same situation. And I did see there's a place in Johannesburg that makes the halos.
Oh, right.
For I think it's a prosthesis.
Prosthesis.
I'll try and link it somewhere on social media. They do. So it is for South Africans. It's definitely somewhere they can get those made because I see it right in other countries that you can just buy it from probably Amazon or something. For here, it's less. You don't really see it.
Real incredible thing to sort of see unfold how quickly and how well a blind dog can adjust and adapt, sort of in a familiar environment that has a bit of routine and has all the sort of checks and balances in place for safety. It's all about engaging.
Client is a week the moment suddenly went blind. They did get from their general vet before they came to see us some anti-anxiety medication. So for those, that it's sudden and the dog is not coping, there is also maybe that to chat with a vet about helping them whilst they kind of come to terms with it all as well.
Yes.